Please welcome to the stage ILR Class of 1988 and Cornell University Trustee Linda Gadsby.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the Hill for Reunion 2018. Hello as well to those of us who are joining us remotely via live stream. We welcome you. My name is Linda Gadsby. I am ILR, class of 1988, and a Cornell trustee. And I am so happy to be here with you this morning. I'm celebrating two reunions this year, one with the Cornell Black Alumni Association, and the other with my classmates celebrating our 30th reunion. So it's already been a great weekend, thanks in part to the fabulous weather that we're having. But reconnecting with old friends, making new ones. I celebrated my birthday on Thursday, so it's been a fabulous weekend. Yes. In addition, I've been given the privilege of introducing today's program, which is truly an honor for me. Before we get started, I want to acknowledge some special guests who are with us in the audience today. President Emeritus Frank H.T. Rhodes and his Frank and Rosa have been among Cornell's greatest ambassadors for over 40 years. So thank you for your dedicated service to Cornell. We love you and appreciate you. And now on to the rest of our program. This morning you'll have the opportunity to hear from Martha Pollack, our 14th president, and she will lead a conversation with two incredible students. Following the conversation, you will have the opportunity to ask questions of the students and also of Martha. It's been my pleasure over this past year to get to know and work with Martha. Although she's just completed her freshman year on campus, she's already left an indelible mark on Cornell's landscape through her leadership. In her address to the graduates about 2 weeks ago at Cornell's 150th commencement, Martha quoted one of her personal heroes, Nelson Mandela, saying, and I quote, "Education is the most powerful weapon we can use to change the world." Martha Pollack is stalwartly committed to providing every Cornell student on each of its campuses with a provocative education and an inclusive experience, so that they will do just that, change the world as Big Red alumni. We're also pleased to have two young Cornell students join Martha this morning to discuss their personal student experiences here on campus. Michaela Richards graduated 12 days ago and is now officially an alumna. Let's give it up for Michaela. Michaela studied government and arts and sciences and was very involved with BSU, the Black Students United organization. She balanced her academics with a job in alumni affairs and is a head clerk for this reunion weekend. Troy Anderson is a rising senior in biological sciences. The last time Troy was on this stage, he was playing alongside Wynton Marsalis and other musicians, from the Cornell Syncopators. In addition to Troy's musical pursuits, he also mentors first-year students and keeps busy also working for alumni affairs, and he too is a head reunion clerk this weekend. Troy and Michaela have clocked over 100 hours so far this weekend, over the last few weeks preparing for reunion, and they'll be working until 2 a.m. tonight. So we thank them both for their committed service, and we're glad that they're here this morning. Please join me in welcoming Martha Pollack, Michaela Richards, and Troy Anderson to the stage.
you, Linda. Good morning, everybody. It's
morning.
It is a real delight to be here, whether you're from a class ending with 3 or 8, or you're one of those people who just likes to come back to every reunion, and there are some of you, whether you're with one of the diverse alumni associations or a professional or graduate alumni association, whether you're here in Bailey Hall or watching on the live stream, it's really terrific to have all of you here. I can't tell you how pleased I am that you've all come back. Now, I know that traditionally on Saturday morning, the president has given a sort of formal talk at reunions. But by my count, each of you, while you were at Cornell, completed at least 2,160 hours of lectures. More if you went to graduate or professional school. So rather than go to 2,161, we thought we'd try something a little bit different today. We're going to let you hear from some people who are true experts on the undergraduate experience at Cornell, Troy and Michaela. We'll talk for a while, and then we'll leave some time at the end. If you want to ask me any questions, there'll be time for you to do that as well. But let's start with these wonderful Cornell alumna and current Cornell student. Can each of you tell me what was your most interesting educational experience, either inside or outside of the classroom here at Cornell? Michaela, do you want to go first?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Great to see you out there. I think that my most interesting Cornell experience, being in arts and sciences, the distribution requirements can seem a bit daunting when you first arrive on campus. But for me, they gave me an opportunity to explore things that I never thought I would have the opportunity to learn. And so I've taken some great classes, and I think my most interesting educational experience was actually a class called Chimpanzee Politics. Exactly. When I first read the description for that class, I was so intrigued, and I decided to take it, and I learned so much about the social structure of the chimpanzee colonies in the wild, and I'm not a science major or a scientist at all, and so I thought this would also be a great way to get that requirement done. But it was such an amazing class, and I learned so much from the professor, and it really opened me up to, I took that class my sophomore year, and it really helped me get on a path of taking courses that were completely outside of my major and learning as much as I could while I was at Cornell.
Troy, how about you?
So as many of you know, we had the great opportunity to have Wynton Marsalis here on campus earlier this year. And he not only played in a concert here, but also spent a week teaching students and giving master classes to everyone in the Cornell community. So as a part of the jazz band, I not only had the opportunity to play with Mr. Marsalis, but I had the wonderful chance to learn from him, from such a wonderful educator, and it was just such an incredible experience to get a chance to spend a week with someone who so few students get a chance to learn from.
It's great. You know, one thing that really strikes me is here we have Michaela, a government major, talking about a science class, and Troy, a biology major, talking about a musical. To me, that's Cornell at its finest.
Yay, there you go.
I think it might also be useful for people to know that the reason Wynton Marsalis was here was he was on what we call the A.D. White Visiting Professor Program, which is a really wonderful program whereby a prominent person in any field, in this case it happened to be music, comes and spends a week on campus, but doesn't just do it one time. They come back over a period of 4 or 5 or 6 years. And so Mr. Marsalis will be back in the future, and other students will have the same opportunity Troy had, which is just great. Okay, so that was what was most interesting. What was most challenging? Either, who wants to go first?
Do you want me to start? Okay. So I think what was most challenging during my educational time at Cornell, you know, I came in with a plan. I was in a certain major, and I knew exactly what I was going to do, like most 18-year-olds do. And, you know, as I was going through the program, I realized that this wasn't something that I was happy with. It wasn't what I wanted to do, but I was afraid to leave. And then I took a course with Professor Peter Katzenstein, his Intro to International Relations course, and I fell in love with the government major from there. And I think that was the most difficult time for me because this was my sophomore spring that I realized I wanted to change my major, and you know, I didn't know if that was something I would be able to do, but after meeting with all of my advisors and meeting with a prospective government major, I made that switch in my junior fall, and I couldn't be happier that I did. it's been such a great opportunity to be in that program and learn as much as I have from some of the greatest professors in the world. And I think that if I hadn't been willing to make that change and seek out the people who could help me and give me a plan that would say, you can complete your major and be done on time, it wouldn't have been such a great experience for me at this university. So I'm really happy I was able to do that.
Troy.
I had a very similar experience. I think every student on Cornell's campus has at least one point where they question, okay, so what am I doing with this degree? And for me, that was sitting in biochemistry when one of my friends sitting next to me registered for the MCAT. Now, I came into Cornell pretty set on some sort of medicine, doing some sort of MD degree. But after Cornell gave me the opportunity to do research with some world-class faculty, I decided that instead I wanted to pursue a PhD. So I'd say my most difficult experience was really just coming to terms with the fact that something that I might have been set on my whole life, I wasn't really interested in anymore because Cornell gave me the opportunity to just explore and really see what I was interested in.
That's great. That's great. Thank you both. Let's change focus a little bit. When people think about Cornell, they think about Ithaca. Tell me how Ithaca and Cornell's location has impacted your time here. Troy, do you want to go first? This is a real question.
So on the one hand, I would say that my legs are a lot stronger after you.
Cornell pads.
But Ithaca is really just such a unique place. It's got some proximity to a lot of cities around New York. I know that my family is based in Rochester, so they're just an hour and a half trip away, and I've been able to visit them many times or have them come up for concerts. But as a whole, Ithaca has so much to offer. Beyond its natural beauty, the parks and everything, we have places like the State Theater, where I had the chance to see Esperanza Spalding last year, and a great deal of other cultural experiences.
Sure. I think for me, I'm from Brooklyn originally. I live on Long Island now, so I'm kind of used to a bit of a faster pace than Ithaca offers. And I think what's been so great about that is Ithaca has given me the opportunity to slow down. Being at Cornell, everything seems to be going so quickly, and there's so much work to get done all the time. But then the city of Ithaca, it's so beautiful, and I've never been into the outdoors. It has never worked for me. But I find, I'm being honest with you guys here. But now I find that when I need to relax, I'm going for walks around Beebe Lake, and I'm finding ways to enjoy my friends' company in ways that I never had before, because when you have access to so many things in a city, you kind of can just go out all the time and do something and have an activity. But here in Ithaca, there's so much natural beauty, and we go for walks, and we enjoy things on campus, like the Cornell Cinemas, one of my favorite places. I try to go at least once a month while I'm here. We find new things to do, and I think having a location that's a little more secluded, it has helped us kind of look inward and find out what really makes us happy when you don't have things all around you all the time. And I think that's been such a blessing of being on the Ithaca campus here.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. I am surprised that neither of you mentioned the lovely, sunny, all-year-round weather. So, you know, here at Cornell, we talk a lot about diversity. We go back to the founding words of Ezra Cornell, that we are a university for any person. We have students from many, many different backgrounds. They bring many perspectives. They come from all around the world. Tell me a little bit about the friendships you've developed here and how your circle of friends are different from or similar to those that you were friends with in high school.
Sure. So in high school, you kind of make friends with everyone that's just in your classes. And with Cornell, I found that, especially with the first year dorms, you have a chance to meet a lot of different people. I know that I lived in Donlan, which is kind of constructed. Which is kind of constructed so that you're forced to meet people. You know, you have to interact with them. And, you know, as a nervous freshman, it really helps to have a little bit of forced interaction. But it's been a really great opportunity to just meet people that are completely different. I know that one of my friends actually started an early jazz group on campus, the original Cornell Syncopators, and if I hadn't met him by complete chance through the jazz program, I would not have joined that, and I wouldn't have discovered something that I'm now extremely passionate about.
Michaela?
Sure. I think that for me, I lived in Dixon. I don't know how many Dixon people I hear. There it is. You know, Dixon, a lot of us, we live alone, and so we're kind of forced to go outside and meet new people. And I was fortunate enough, before I came here, I did the pre-freshman summer program. So I was here for the summer before my freshman year and got to make a lot of friends that way from all over the country. And I think moving forward, we knew that we kind of had a close-knit group kind of set up before August, and I wanted to make sure that I was doing things where I could meet new people. And so I was kind of attending different organizations and going to their events just because I wanted the exposure. In my classes in high school, it's just kind of you're friends with everyone who's there. But at Cornell, you actively have to work to meet new people, and you kind of put yourself in situations where you're meeting people of different backgrounds. I have a lot of friends who are international students, and you know their experiences are completely different than mine, and it's really great to have that perspective because sometimes you kind of get trapped in yourself and what you see the world as, and it's really good to have made so many friends with people who are from different states. I mean, just the viewpoint from like a New Yorker to someone who's in Wyoming, that alone will take you across the world. And so it's been really helpful to join organizations that had I not been in them, I would have never met some of my closest friends. And I think that's been the greatest part of it all.
That's great. It's interesting that you both did mention your freshman residence hall. I mean, one thing I think this group should know is that we are in the process of designing several new residence halls. We're going to have 2,000 new beds on campus. And Vice President Ryan Lombardi, who's overseeing this, is looking very carefully at design features that will encourage interaction, that will, as you say, force, you know, just ensure that students bump into each other and have an opportunity to talk with other people. And I think that's very important. So let's talk about something that I talk about a lot. I tend to use the phrase education with verve, using modern approaches to teaching where students are engaged in the educational experience and where we know from the literature these approaches have better outcomes. Have you taken classes where the classroom has been flipped or there's been some other innovation? Did you like it? What was challenging about it? Tell me about those experiences.
Can you go first? I can start. Okay, so I am someone, I've never taken a class in Bailey Hall. It's very large lectures, it gets away from me. I prefer to learn in small group settings. And so I think it's kind of starting my junior year especially, I've taken the time to enroll in a lot of senior seminars. And so those courses are 15 people or less, just the professor. Usually there's no TA, so you kind of have unfiltered access to your professor at all times. And so for the last few semesters, I've taken those courses. I would want to say at least two or three each semester. It's just been a really great experience. And I think that having those opportunities to have access to your professor at all times, I think has been so helpful, and we've learned so much because in these classrooms, they meet once a week for 2 to 3 hours. And so while you're there, we do a lot of research outside of the class, and it usually turns into a debate depending on what department the class is in. Because everyone comes in having read the material, and then everyone brings in outside material, and they're saying, well, I disagree with the author because of this, and we're going back and forth, and it kind of forces you to open up and look at the new perspectives and different viewpoints and wonder, okay, when I read it, this is what I took from that. But the person sitting across from me, they got something completely different. And those discussions have been so helpful. And I think having opportunities that aren't just lectures, where you can interact with your peers and the professors are the ones where you learn the most. And them being so small is also a helpful feature because you get to know your classmates really well when there's just 15 of you debating for a semester.
Great. Troy?
So I've had the chance to take a couple classes that didn't follow the traditional, you know, one professor sits in front of a podium and teaches the class. So one of those was Physics 2207, or Fundamentals of Physics. Or, sorry, 1102.
So many numbers.
But this class was essentially set up so that you would read the textbook outside of class and then go in and take a set of labs and a set of demos, and there were TAs that were readily available, so you could essentially access tutoring almost any time of day. So I found that this model worked really well in terms of just retaining information, because it's very easy for information to just go in one ear and out the other, but when you're actually seeing stuff happen, it has an entirely different effect on the students. Another class was Biology 1780, which is the evolution course. And in this course, we actually had recorded lectures that we watched outside of class and worked in a group setting on more problem-solving activities during the actual lecture session. And I found that this class made it a lot easier to understand kind of the big picture. You know, why is this information important, rather than just learning the information itself. So overall, I think that these flipped classroom experiences give us a lot more in terms of just retaining the information and also understanding how it's applied in the real world.
That's great. Thank you both. Okay, so we just admitted next year's class. Applications were up close to 10%. They were up even more amongst international students and even more amongst students from underrepresented minorities. We're bringing in really a tremendous class and the most diverse class ever. What advice would you give them? What advice was helpful to you when you started?
I think that if I had to give the freshmen coming in any advice, it would be to recognize that you haven't figured it all out yet. You know, when I got here, I told my parents, I wrote down the plan, I walked them through it, I said, this is what I'm doing, you won't have to worry about it. And then my sophomore year, I'm calling my mom, like, I think I have to change things now. Is that okay? And I think being okay with uncertainty is something that is really hard for our generation. You know, we come in and everyone's telling us, oh, this is what bank I'm working at, I'm going to law school, I'm doing this, and people feel the need to kind of commit to things very quickly just so they can say they have something to do or that they know what's going on. And I think it's really important coming into college to understand that your experience is not going to be like your next door neighbor or your best friend, and that you should recognize that, you know, there are different pathways to the same outcomes, and that it's really important to kind of give yourself the opportunity to grow, because you never know. Taking the class that's outside of your major might just give you your passion in life, and if you don't try that, you might find yourself stuck in something where you're not happy for a long time. So I would tell them, you know, take it easy and just explore. There's options.
So I'm actually one of the undergraduate biology advisors, so I kind of help the incoming freshmen decide, okay, which classes do I take and what's a manageable course load. So first, I think it's just important to recognize your limits. We encourage all the incoming students to take about 15 credits, because it's very easy. When you're in high school, you take about 9 courses over the year. And if you come to Cornell and you take 9 courses, as many of you know, it's going to be very rough. So one thing would be recognizing limits, and just don't overload on courses. Make sure you can focus on the ones that you have. Another one that I tell all of my incoming students is make sure that you're taking courses that are completely outside of your major. Because Cornell is such a large university, and everyone is interested in something completely different in one way or another. And because of that, we have faculty that pretty much teach anything imaginable. So it's important for the incoming students to just explore their interests and take something that's just like not related to their major at all. Like Michaela said, just see what's out there.
Chimpanzee politics, for example, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so one of the things that has been most fun to me during reunions is hearing from the reunion class tell me my favorite memory, my favorite course, my favorite activity, something that was their favorite that they think back on 5, 10, 50 years later at Cornell. You haven't quite graduated, but so far, what's been your favorite memory? And then we'll ask Michaela or class.
Again, I'm going to refer back to Wynton Marsalis, because that was just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I actually stood right over there and, you know, got to play a solo in that concert, but just having Mr. Marsalis stand 10 feet away from me was just really... It's hard to put that into words.
You know, I can tell you, because I sat right over there. And if you think he was beaming now, you should have seen him and the other students that night. It was incredible. Michaela, you've graduated. What was your favorite course or memory here?
You know, I've taken so many classes outside of the government department because I really did want to make sure I tried a little bit of everything. And surprisingly, my favorite course is actually one I took this past semester in the spring, a science class. What a surprise. Exactly. It was called Science, Medicine, and the Body, and it was a course with Professor Lucinda Ramberg, and for the entire semester, we explored kind of the histories of medicine and how medicine has been kind of conducted and built up and what that really means, who holds the power in medicine, who makes the decisions, what is the body and how do you define that. That class, we had so many debates amongst the 15 of us that were in there with our professor, and it was such a good learning experience because I'm a government major, I like to write papers, I like to study political theory, and this class was something, you know, I came in and I found out it was the senior seminar for the BSoc major, so when we were all going around, it was like, oh, it's just me from arts and science. This is your class to graduate. And so I kind of didn't have a lot of the background coming in that they did. And so I did have to work a little harder to kind of catch up on the terminology I didn't understand and things like that. But I learned so much in the class, and I had such a good experience kind of talking about science with my classmates. And Professor Ramberg was amazing. Ran into her at Wegmans the other day, and we were talking about this talk. She said she's going to watch, so hi. But great. It was a great time.
Great.
Casual.
Okay, last question. I know you guys have been asked this question probably every year for the last 18 years, but what are you doing this summer? And in your case, Michaela, what next? You can start.
Okay, sure. So this summer, I will actually be staying in Ithaca for a couple more weeks. I'm leaving at the end of July. I'm really happy to be in Ithaca when the weather is going to be nice and there's no work to do. So I'm going to kind of enjoy the Ithaca weather. In August, I'm going to be taking a trip to Europe to celebrate my graduation. Probably a few countries if I can get them all done at once. And then in the fall, hopefully I'll be working in New York City. I'm looking to work at a nonprofit, so that could be fun.
Great. Troy?
My summer is maybe a little bit less exciting than Michaela's. no trip to Europe planned, but I will actually be here on Cornell's campus for the entirety of the summer, working in Kinzelberg Hall, right behind Bailey, doing research with the GULAB on mitochondrial DNA. So there's hopefully working on an honors thesis and working on publishing a paper. So
great. Yeah. That's great. So please join me in thanking these incredible students. At this point, please use a mic because this is being live streamed and we're happy to answer any questions. I promised them I would take all the hard ones, so they only get softball questions.
Hi. Hi, Paul Cashman, class 73. Hi, Troy.
Hello.
I have two friends who are Cornell students currently. One finished his sophomore year, one his junior year. Both are in computer science, one in arts, one in engineering. One of them just finished 21 credits this semester. The other finished 28 credits, which is like telling me that he ran a mile in 2 minutes. I had my hands full with 15 or 16. Is this at all usual? Thank you.
Not at all.
No.
There yes. are.
Go ahead.
There are definitely some people that would be classified as basically superhumans at Cornell, but no.
I have several of the deans here. Yeah, they're all shaking their heads no too. None of us ever heard this.
I think I've maxed out at like 19, but no, 20.
Yes.
Thank you. My question is addressed to you as a new president here. What have been some of your experiences and challenges as your first year?
Oh, wow. How long do you have? So Cornell has been amazing. It's been an amazing first year. It's hard for me to believe. It's been sort of a whirlwind of a year. I've been extraordinarily impressed with the students. I mean, you might think we picked the cream of the crop, and we did. But but there are so many students who, like Michaela and Troy, when you talk with them, are just extraordinarily impressive. I've also been incredibly impressed with the faculty. Now, look, I come from Michigan, another university that had great faculty. But the thing I see here, I see two things in our faculty that are really remarkable. One is an extraordinary commitment to Cornell, not just to their fields of discipline, but to Cornell. And the other, I was talking about this with my chief of staff just the other day, is an incredible willingness and openness and actually inviting of undergraduates to work actively on research projects. It's really something I think that defines the faculty here. And then that's been great. We've had some challenges this past year, but everybody has pulled together and worked through them. Really, I'll tell you, I'll be completely honest, the only thing I miss
is being 25 minutes from the Detroit airport, where I could get anywhere in the world. Because the Ithaca airport, No, it's been great. I've loved it here. Yes.
Aloha from Hawaii.
Aloha.
I am from the hotel school class. Hi, Frank and Rosa, Canadian. It's a Canadian girl. So I like what you were talking about, teaching techniques, success, environment. Mm-hmm. Gosh, industry, what happened? Where are you? I mean, they just stand up there and give you the thing and you're done. I don't understand why companies, industry, haven't evolved with creativity in sharing their information. Do you understand what I mean? They're just, okay, so they would like to explain the change. And so your manager will just get up there and read through it.
So I think what you're seeing in industry is the result of many, many, many years in academia where people, that was how we were educated. That was how I was educated. I went to class, and probably most of you heard lectures, you went home, you read, you came back to class. That is all changing. Let me tell you about one very exciting program called the Active Learning Initiative. To date, it's mostly been in the College of Arts and Sciences, although there have been pieces of it, similar programs going on in CALS and ILR and engineering and other schools, and we are now taking it campus-wide. And the idea in the Active Learning Initiative is to, in a very principled way, flip the classroom. And what happens in a flipped classroom is that the students do what you would have in the past gotten in the lecture. They get the material outside of the classroom. And then in the classroom, they do challenging hands-on work. Now, I'm a computer scientist, I'm data-driven, but the interesting thing about this approach is that there's a lot of data and evidence that shows that people do better. And in fact, our own faculty have demonstrated in some of the core biology and physics classes that when you adopt an active learning approach, when you flip the classroom in this way, not only does everyone do better in the end, but students who come from under-resourced backgrounds, from high schools where they didn't get the same quality of education, that gap closes. And so we're starting to teach more and more in that way. And my hope is, over time, as our students learn in that way, then they go into industry and they share information like that too.
Question from the balcony. Question from the balcony.
Hello. I'm Cornell Dawson.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll get you right after. I didn't see you there. We'll let
up in the balcony.
Oh, I'm sorry. There we go. Okay, in the back. The light is right in my eyes.
Cornell Dawson, the 55th reunion. I was going to respond to the initial question of this afternoon. I thought I had a unique situation with the many credit hours I took my last semester at Cornell in order to graduate. I had dropped a course in the fall, and that added three more to the spring, and it was an engineering curriculum, and we ended up needing 24 hours to graduate. Wow. And I couldn't schedule 24, I had to schedule 25. So my hat is off to the gentleman or lady that handled 28, because I had a full arts curriculum and 10 hours in engineering labs, and I did nothing but study all semester.
Well, kudos to you. Okay, go ahead. And then we'll go there.
Thank you guys for talking today. My name is Nicole Bonilla. I'm class of 2013, so very excited to be here for my first reunion. My question is, Michaela talked about how she appreciated the smaller class sizes and how they foster conversation, debate, more critical thinking. And Martha, you mentioned that there will be 2,000 more beds on campus for freshmen. Is Cornell planning on hiring more faculty, or how are you planning to accommodate the greater influx of students while maintaining the intimate classroom setting that Michaela spoke about?
Okay, thank you. Great question. And first of all, I should clarify, we're building 2,000 more beds, but we're only increasing the undergraduate student body and over a period of about 4 or 5 years by 1,100. So 900 of those beds are simply to help with the pressing housing needs we have. And the answer is, A, yes, we are going to hire more faculty. And B, where the there are some programs now where the demand, the Dyson School, for example, we are just not admitting enough students. The admissions rates are just too low. There is such pressure to get in. So we need to relieve that pressure. And then, yeah, hire more faculty and, frankly, also hire more support staff. We're not going to just bring in these students and do nothing. Oh, I'm sorry. I promised him next and then you. Awesome. That's okay. Go ahead.
Hi. John Lin, class of 93, College of Engineering. My question is, I just wanted to hear about Cornell's commitment to financial aid, as well as increasingly there's been more attention paid, especially for the wealthier universities, about the percent of the endowment focused on trying to reduce the cost of tuition, and I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really important question. So Cornell has been extremely committed to financial aid. We've more than doubled the amount of financial aid over the past 5, 6, 7 years, I forget the exact amount. And actually, the cost for students with need today is less than it was in 2008, 2009. So we've held the line on cost for students with need. Now, I recognize that for students sort of right at the margin, it begins still to be difficult. And I am looking as a highest priority for the philanthropy that I do to seek funds to increase financial aid further. We are already well ahead of our peers in terms of the percent of operating funds that we put back into financial aid. More broadly, when I talk about diversity, one of my key priorities is to increase socioeconomic diversity. That's an area where we're lagging and we need to do more. And let me say to this audience, I need resources to do it. So when you're thinking about your annual fund, see, Fred Van Sickle, the Vice President for Development, is clapping over there. Thank you for the question. It is a very, it's one of the things that keeps me up at night. Yes.
Hi, my name is Maya Carter, and I'm actually a high school student. This is my first time
Great.
Here at Cornell.
Welcome.
I have a question for Michaela. In your journey looking for schools, like I'm trying to figure out what kind of school that I would like to go to when I do graduate next year. What was it like coming into a school that's so culturally diverse and to a school that really tries to help out their minority students?
Sure. I think for me especially coming in, I'm a first generation student, very proud of it. Thank you. Coming in to Cornell, I'm like, this is such a prestigious university, and I don't know if I have the tools right away to kind of build up the same rapport with my professors. I don't know if I will be able to communicate and really take advantage of the resources because there's no blueprint, for me coming in. I didn't have a lot of people that I could turn to. And so I think for me, kind of coming to this university, I had to make an active choice to say, okay, I want to seek out help in any way that I possibly can. Looking at a university where there are resources, I spend a lot of time at 66 Thurston, the Center for Intercultural Diversity, where there are people who can help us and counselors and people that can guide me throughout my time at Cornell and really getting to know my professors. And I met with my major advisor before I even decided to become a government major, right? I sat with Professor Andrew Murtha and we kind of talked through his research and what he was doing and the major and the program. And that's how I knew, okay, this is a place where I'm going to be able to get advice and find support. And just kind of going through the resources and finding places on this campus where you feel comfortable and you feel that you have someone who's supporting you and someone who understands what you're going through, I think is so important for so many students here because it can be a lot. It can be a culture shock for many students for a variety of things. If you're an international student, this is a lot. You're away from home and you need support. And I think for me, it's been a journey of kind of coming into my own and recognizing, what I want out of my Cornell education and what I want to have, and then kind of putting a plan together and finding the right people who could help me get to where I wanted to go.
And one thing that can help with incoming students is, thanks to the generosity of an alumnus who funded this, we're opening a new first generation center, mm-hmm. which is going to be fully staffed with sort of a, think of it as like a hotel concierge mm-hmm. that will help first generation students.
Warren Childs, Arts, class of 78. My parents both went here.
Can you lift the mic a little? It's hard to hear you.
My father was a class of 53. My mother was class of 55.
Great.
And you coming from Michigan, my father always mentioned that when the Wolverines came to Ithaca in the early 50s, they absolutely got smoked here.
That's true. But let me say, I won't say anything.
However, the next year at Ann Arbor, it wasn't pretty. So so I just wanted you to let you know that.
Yes. We're not going to play against Michigan now. Yes, go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bill Howard, class of 63 in engineering. And although I went to what may be regarded as a professional school, and I know that Cornell is regarded by many as the first American university, in the sense that Ezra Cornell and the Morrell Land Grant forced a broadening from the trivium that people traditionally had taught in universities. I now live in Arizona, and we have a university president out there who talks about the new American university, Michael Crow. Mm-hmm. I'm married to a wonderful lady who earned her PhD in history mm-hmm. at Michael Crow School and watched her department disappear as it was merged into a number of other departments, so university resources could be piled on to professional schools and schools which were related directly to the development of the economy at the expense of the humanities. And my concern is that in my world, there's tremendous political pressure to produce universities like the, quote, New American University. How is Cornell going to deal with that in the future to assure that we have an informed, literate populace?
So I'm really glad you mentioned that question. It's a really good question. And let me say a few things in response. First of all, Michael Crow is the president of a public university, and that causes very different political pressures. We have a lot more freedom to chart our own course. Secondly, I'm someone who always looks for differentiators. What makes Cornell unique? And frankly, I think one of the biggest differentiators for Cornell is the fact that we are both an Ivy League college and a land-grant university. So we are fundamentally committed to the liberal arts broadly, including the humanities, but all the liberal arts, as well as to the professional schools. And then, of course, also to the kind of outreach that comes with being a land-grant institution. We will always be committed to that. If we weren't committed to that, we wouldn't be Cornell, we wouldn't be who we are. Now, the challenge for us, it seems to me, is that people like me who firmly believe in the unbelievable importance of the humanities for all the reasons you suggest, still have to recognize a student body that sometimes votes with its feet or a student body whose parents are pushing them to vote with their feet. So one of the things that we're trying to do is develop ways to enable students to pursue their passions when their parents are pushing them otherwise or to recognize their passions without feeling, oh my God, I'm not going to get a job. Let me give you just one example. We have a new program called the Milstein program, I'm not going to get the title quite right, Milstein program in humanity and technology. This is a program that takes about 100 students who are majoring in the humanities. It gives them a little bit of education in computer science, and it sends them down to Cornell Tech for a summer. And while they're at Cornell Tech, they work with the Cornell Tech faculty. Now, the beauty of this program, it seems to me, is not only that it gives humanities students an opportunity to develop a few of those technical skills that they believe may be helpful in finding jobs, but even more importantly, it says to the folks at Cornell Tech, your world, you're not solving technical problems. You're not even solving just socio-technical problems. You're solving humano-socio-technical problems. When you're building those automated driving cars, somebody better be thinking about the impact of everybody whose jobs are going to be lost. You listen to these undergraduates who have a humanistic perspective. So I think it's by continuing to honor the humanities and the liberal arts broadly, and then build connections between them and the other fields that we can fight the forces you're talking about.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And since, on a different topic, but since you mentioned the engineering college and since Lance Collins, the dean of the engineering college, is here, I want to mention one more thing. This is one of the things that I get to be really proud of, even though I had very little to do with it. Lance did almost all of it. We talk about diversity all the time. This year's freshman class in engineering is 51% female. Yay, Lance.
We have another question.
Okay, I'm getting
from
one,
balcony.
Two. I'm afraid I have balcony. Time for two more questions. I will be
balcony.
Around. Oh, three more questions. One, two, three. Balcony and one on BJ. Each side. Sorry, it's hard to see up there.
Hi, President Polk. My name is BJ Seasoko. I'm class of 2007.
Are you speaking in the balcony? Yeah, okay.
Yes, I'm up in the balcony. Okay. So I'm glad you just talked about a little bit about diversity and how we are admitting a more multicultural and more diverse class. As our student demographics change, obviously that leads to...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You've got to talk into the microphone more.
This is where I'm not
Thank
used...
Thank you.
Okay. Normally everyone tells me I talk too loud, so this is a first. So as you're talking about admitting our most diverse class with 51% of women being admitted to the engineering college, that's obviously changing student demographics. That leads to changing alumni demographics. So I'm wondering, as our alumni demographics change, how will our programming for alumni change, and also how can alumni be involved in that conversation?
Oh, great question. So we now have a number of alumni groups that are specifically targeted to different diversity groups. There is a Black Alumni Association, there's a Latino Alumni Association, there's an Asian American Alumni Association, there's a LGBTQ plus alumni association. And yesterday, for the first time ever, they held a joint reception and program with all of those groups together. So I encourage the alumni as they go out into the world to connect through these alumni associations and then to help us here in Ithaca become more diverse by talking with students, by sending them here, and by giving us feedback about what's working, what's not working, and how we can do better. But start with those alumni groups.
Cool, thank you.
Thank
My
you.
Mom also says hello, so.
Who says hello?
His mom.
His mom. I didn't. wait, who's your mom? Oh, he's gone. He's coming back. Who's your mom?
So I was the one student that gave you a hug at graduation, so my mom.
Oh. You gotta love this job.
Hi, my name is Chris Saxman, class of 1988, and my question actually follows up on Mr. Howard's. I wanted to ask you that, I read in the Cornell Daily Sun that on Thursday, we opened a new campus in Cornell.
We what?
We opened a new campus in Cornell, the Cornell Tech.
Right.
And so I wanted to ask what your vision was for Cornell Tech in the broader Cornell community, which you began to address, but also in the broader community in the country, in the world.
Yeah.
What do you see the role of this?
So I think Cornell Tech is transformational. I think it's transformational for Cornell. And I will tell you, you know, a year ago when I first got here, every time I said that, I had to preface that by saying, now Ithaca will always be our heart and soul. I think people now believe that. We're not giving up on Ithaca. The experience that Michaela describes of running into her professor in Wegmans, the experience of having sort of the solitude, if you like to think. I mean, that is, again, one of our differentiators. I don't have to say that anymore. I think the people believe that. But it's also true that we live in an increasingly urban world. And the opportunities that are opened up by our presence in New York for humanities students to experience cultural activities in New York, for students working in urban planning to try out their urban solutions in urban environments, and frankly, the ability we have to further make known the activities we've had there. While Cornell's been in Manhattan for more than a century, our cooperative extension is in every single borough. ILR and engineering and architecture and planning, and I'm sure I'm forgetting others, have programs in New York. I think that there are so many opportunities for us to pair and tightly couple not just Cornell Tech, but all of our activities in New York with what's going on in Ithaca. And again, that becomes another differentiator for us. There is not another university, certainly not another world-class university, that has both the rural and urban campuses. Um, Okay, I know she's cutting me off on time, but I am going to take one more question. But I've got to try out one idea on this group. So one of the challenges we face in Ithaca is dual careers for faculty. So we hire faculty, and they have a spouse or a partner, and the spouse or partner is in finance, or they're in architecture, or banking, or whatever, and we don't have those jobs in Ithaca. So here's an idea I have, and for those of you who live in the New York region, think about this, and if you see me on the street, let me know what you think. My idea is we stand up a sort of co-working facility up here in Ithaca. We provide, you know, administrative support and so on. And then we ask our alumni in New York to look at the CVs, the resumes, of the spouses and partners. And if you have opportunities for the kinds of jobs where people could work remotely and then periodically come down, work with us to hire them, because that'll make it easy. I think it's a good idea. All right. All right, I'm on it. Okay, last question, or she's gonna like get the hook and pull me off. Yeah, go ahead.
Mark Hosa, chemical engineering class of 73. I came here from a woefully inadequate high school and found in freshman physics, I just wasn't at all prepared. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up spending, freshman physics class was a large lecture class, like 100 plus people. I ended up spending an hour a week with Professor Newhall, and he taught me how to think. He taught me how to address solving problems. Without his help, I probably wouldn't have made it through here. And I ended up in the top 10% of my class in Chem E when I graduated, and then later on got my PhD in chemical engineering. And I owe it all to Professor Newhall.
Wasn't that a great conversation? Well, thank you, President Pollack. Thank you, Michaela. Thank you, Troy. You make me very proud to be an alum and trustee of Cornell. At this time, I'd like to welcome you to join us as After Eight and the Hangovers join us on the stage to sing the alma mater.
Can you sing?